Okay. Hi, I'm Terpy. I'm alcoholic. My story is no different than anybody else's. I drank a lot and I wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm done. But I'd like to talk about what got me here. I lied, I stole, I cheated. I would get evicted in New Jersey where I grew up. If you you're gonna have to excuse me, I got cold. And if you lied and stole and cheated the way that I did, and I had a lot of stuff to carry when I got here. So I couldn't, when I got evicted in Jersey, you had to move your own stuff out of your house. You set an appointment. I never made the appointment, so I would break back in. Then finally they got sick of it. They put a padlock on and I couldn't get back in. So one night I was cold, I was tired. My husband came and got my younger son and told me I would never see him again in life. And he wound up speaking here not long ago for you. So things do happen. Miracles happen right in front of me. And so I ran to my mother and asked my mother, no, that's a lie. I went to my mother's house and she knew by everybody in Pleasantville, because it's a small town, everybody knew everybody, knew that I was drinking and carrying on and doing things I wasn't supposed to be doing. And my house looked like a pig pen. And I couldn't remember the last time I took a bath. My hair was matted to my head. I turned sideways. I looked like a little zipper. And it was really bad. Go to my mother's, and that particular day, she didn't look out the window to see who was at her door. She just opened the door. And when she cracked it that much, I slid right on in and I stayed there for 4 months. And she says, "Well, baby, you got to do something." And I told her. And one day I left her house and did some stuff I wasn't supposed to do. And I came back and I told my mother, I said, "I need help." And she said, "Thank you, Jesus." That's all she said to me. Now, this was an alcoholic mother that stopped drinking by sucking on lollipops. So I said, "Oh, that sounds great. I'll do that." So I was sucking on a lollipop. Nothing happened. I still wanted to drink and do other things. So I said, "Maybe if I dip it in some Southern Comfort, it'll work." So I started doing that. So those things happened to me. And then finally, I hit a bottom like no other. I'm at my mother's house. She told me to go upstairs and clean myself up. I gave her my little raggedy insurance card, asked her to call you people or call the insurance people. And they told her who to call. And they said that it sounded like she was a candidate for the program. So call this number. And that they don't do that anymore. So, excuse me. So she says to me, she says, "If you get into this place," she says, "will you please listen to these people?" That's about the only thing she said to me. She never took that advice for herself. She just stopped on her own. And that was some time ago. So what wind up happening to me, I went upstairs, I cleaned myself up. My mother had you the raggedy insurance card. You people got on the phone and said, "Well, we can't talk to you. We got to talk to the alcoholic." I said, "No, Ma, you talk to him. You talk to him. I don't want to talk to him." So she said, she got up and just went into the kitchen. I left the phone sitting there and the lady saying, "Hello, hello." And I finally picked up the phone and I told the lady that I needed some help. And she asked me how much I drank. And I said, "Two beers." And I could hear the lady laughing on the other end of the phone. And I didn't drink beer the whole time I was out there. And then she says, "What makes you think that you want to get some help?" I told her the truth. I said, "I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I'm really tired. I can't keep living like this." And she says, "Well, can you get to Atlantic City Hospital?" And I said, "Oh, no, I can't. I used to work there. People know me. Like everybody in the town knew what I was doing." So she said, "Sorry, go to Summers Point." Thank you. She said, "Go to Summers Point." I went to Summers Point Hospital. Didn't I forgot the door that she told me to go into. So all the way driving to Summers Point Hospital, and it wasn't that far, I said in my head, "As soon as this bus stops, I'm gonna jump off, I'm gonna get some money, and I'm gonna go get high." But that's not what happened. The bus broke down right in front of the door that I was supposed to get out at. And these two women in scrubs get on the bus and called out my name, my whole government name, and said, "Come with me." And I wasn't going to say nothing at first. I just sat there. And then they looked me dead in the face and they said, "Come with us." She says, "This is the best thing for you." And I believed her. And I got off the bus and went in there with her. They took my blood test. They did a blood test and urine and everything. And they came back And the woman said, not the nurse, but another lady that was going to try to find me a rehab to go to. She says, I don't know why you're not dead. I said, me neither. You don't say that when you're in the hospital in the crazy ward, because then they lock you up in a rubber room. And I stayed in that rubber room for 14 hours until they finally found a place for me to go. And they would talk to me through a window. I felt like I was in a cuckoo's nest, I tell you. And they let me out. They took me up to another part of Jersey, and that's where I went. And this is where my story began from Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was there for 3 weeks. This particular day, on the third week, this guy comes in, and you're in a crazy house. There were schizophrenics, adolescents, and alcoholics. We were all on separate floors, and we were on the bottom floor because we smoked like chimneys. I used to smoke then, in and out, in and out, in and out. And this guy pulls up in this truck. We all ate together, and it was a room about five times the size of this. And the guy came in. They had not only one table, they had like three tables, because you're in a crazy house, you don't know who's going to go off. And they had the guy sit back up against the wall with an exit on each side so he can get out of one door or another. So we got there, and he was talking, and I'm like, oh God, here comes another one of these people. And people would come in every week, didn't relate to anything anybody was saying. I would sit there and pick at my nails and look at the floor and rock back and forth, didn't pay any attention. But it was something about this gentleman. He talked about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He talked about his family. I said, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed for this man. He's telling all his family business. But let me tell you, I came in here with a lot of business that I wouldn't want to tell nobody. And I finally broke down and started telling some stuff to the therapist. And this guy, when he started talking about the character defects, selfishness, dishonest, pride and arrogance and all that stuff, my head and my hands dropped because I was sitting like this and my hands dropped and I leaned in. And then he closed out by saying, if a drunk like him can do it, that I can do it. And I believed him. It was my turn to go see the counselor after that meeting. And I ran in there and I told her, I said, that man out there said that if he could do it, that I could do it. I can stop drinking and I won't have a drug, alcohol problem anymore. And she looked at me and she says, what are you talking about? I said, he said it. And she says, no, sweetheart, I think he's talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. So for 27 and a half years, I've been chasing it. My anniversary date is March 3rd, 1999. And from that to this, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink because of the man in the crazy house sold me on Alcoholics Anonymous that night. From where he came from to where he was that day, I believed him. He didn't look nothing like he described himself as a drunk the way he was talking. And when I got there, my hair was still matted. Somebody finally washed it and they helped me to find clothes that would fit in their little donation box. And I felt like new money. It was like a miracle had happened. So we're standing there, and he finally says, the lady at the crazy house says, well, where are you going to go when you get out of here? I said, I'm going to go stay with my mother. She says, oh, no, you're not. She says, you're homeless. And I said, excuse me? And that's the first resentment that I know that I had, telling me that I'm homeless. I'm not homeless as long as I got a mother living. I ain't homeless. So she said, no, you're not paying no rent there. You don't pay no bills, no nothing. You're homeless. So there's a hat here, and you're going to pick out a state that we're going to send you to, and that's where you're going to go. And look, fortunate for me, I picked Washington, D.C. And my older son had just graduated college. My husband had taken my younger son. My son came home from college break one time and saw the condition I was living in. He said, I'm not coming back here. My husband took my younger son. I had nothing to go back to. And my son happened to be here. And when I called the Oxford House, they accepted me over the phone. When they interviewed me in person, they turned me down. I called my son. I'm crying. I said, can I come stay with you until I get my life together? You know, that's a loaded question for an alcoholic mother to be asking somebody. But he said, yes. And he says, tomorrow I leave to go out on go out of the country on business. He says, and I'm gonna give you some rules. Do not smoke in my house, because I was still smoking it. Do not have no drugs in my house. Don't have company in my house. Don't, if you wash it, if you eat out of a dish, you wash your dish, you clean up after yourself when you go to the bath. He's talking to me like I talked to him when he was growing up. I was like, what the heck? And I'm sitting there going just like this because I didn't have nowhere else to go. So I said, I told him, yes, I'll follow every rule. So I get here and I called the people from the crazy house, and this lady, Marie, she would give me all the directions on where the meetings were, and I would walk to everything because I was too embarrassed to ask the bus driver to tell me what bus I had to catch to get to wherever I had to go. Wind up going downtown, downtown DC, and I was supposed to go to this agency to help me out to find a job. Well, I hear somebody now, all these people on the street, and somebody's calling my name. Don't nobody know me? So I'm thinking, now I'm nervous because I'm thinking of somebody to follow me all the way there because my life is so important. You know, somebody I stole money from or cheated or did something else with. And they're calling my name and I wouldn't turn around. I was scared. And he finally caught up with me and touched my shoulder. I thought I was gonna pass out. And it was a guy. I went to high school with his sister and he knew who I was after all this time. And I told him, and I'm getting ready to cry. And he's saying, where are you going? I said, I'm trying to find this agency and I'm lost. I don't know where I'm going. He said, oh, that's my agency too. Come with me. So I come in there. So I'm telling you this story because already four miracles had already happened to me, not even paying attention to it. Going to the place, the lady and I, you're supposed to spend 20 minutes with this woman to see what your qualifications were. You know, I was in that with that woman for 2 hours. This lady took a liking to me, gave me the best job assignment. It was a miracle. So then I started working. I got in touch, and my boss loved me. He thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I was like real happy going to meetings and doing all this stuff that I was supposed to be doing. And then one thing happened. I'll never forget it. I was at the job. The phone rang, and it was this guy that was calling looking for my boss, and he wasn't there. And I told my boss, I said, my sponsor had told me. Because I told him everything. I didn't have no cut cards. I was telling people I was alcoholic, people that I trusted. And he said, and I said, I need to call some people that I owe money to. He says, oh, he says, I'm going out of the office for 2.5 hours. Use my office. I was like, great. So the first person I called was my sponsor. She says, well, that's great. Hang up the phone and start your calls. So, because when I got here, I was $66,000 in debt. And I had to pay these people back. Now, this is the other thing that happened to me. I used to carry around a shoebox of the last bills that I ever received. They were all late notices, red marks on them, pay or get go to jail, whatever they want to do to me. And I carried that box with me, and I, like a dummy, showed my sponsor. And she went through it, and she said, well, you know you're gonna have to pay this. I said, do you know how much money that is? No, she asked me, she said, do you know how much money that is? I said, no, I never added it up. And when she did, it was $66,000 that I owed. And I'd like, I don't know how I'm gonna pay this. And she says, you're gonna pay it, and I'm gonna show you how. One, she knew a guy that works in a law firm for accountants, and he showed me everything that I had to do. He said, you know, there's a warrant out for your arrest. I said, I don't remember it. He says, well, did you ever have a blackout? I said, no. He says, you remembered it. I just didn't want to fess up to it. And I went back home and I paid that bill. I could check that off. And then the next thing that happened, a lady called me and I went to her and I wasn't in a blackout. It was just a very good friend of mine. She loved me through a lot. I used to go to her house. I would be drunker than drunk. Somebody gave me a magic pill and I was hallucinating. And she got me through that. She kept me on her sofa for 2 days. She let me bathe. She bought me a towel. She would bring me food because she would ask me if I was hungry and my stomach be growling. And I would tell her, no, I'm not hungry. She would bring me food, sit me down and talk to me, try to, I don't know what she was trying to do, but she was a saving grace to me. And shortly after I left, I found out that she had gotten cancer and I went back to visit her. 2 months later, she passed away, but that was a guardian angel in my life. And she got me through that period. But the people that I owed, and I wind up paying those people one paycheck at a time, because my sponsor said, your word doesn't mean nothing to these creditors. She said, when you don't, if you don't have the money, you don't call them. They don't want to hear from somebody a promise from a person that hasn't paid them in 10 years. So you gotta you suck it up. Every paycheck, she would tell me how much I would have to take out, which creditor to call, and I did that. And one company, everybody was very kind to me. The lady said, this is so old, we're not even gonna do anything about it. We'll take it off and we'll call the people that do your credit. She would call them for me. True to her word, 2 weeks later, I got a letter stating that everything was cleared off of that for that particular company. The other one, they told me to make a one-time fee that was half of what I was supposed to pay. I was happy because I'm thinking I'm going to have money in my pocket. So I paid that, and I had to send everything certified mail, my sponsor said. She says, I don't want to hear nobody saying that they lost your money or lost anything. She says, get a money order, make sure you have copies of everything. And the lawyer that was helping me out, he says, you go back to Jersey, you straighten out all these warrants that's on you. You take care of all that stuff. You pay the money you're supposed to pay. And before I knew it, all this stuff was getting paid. And I had one lump sum that was left. And what happened was somebody told me to take the father of my first son to court. And I did. And he had paid me a lot of back child support, cash money. The judge said, we don't want a credit card. We don't want none of that. You bring cash when you come back here on the third and give it to this woman. And that's what he did. And I had to take that money. I went right to my sponsor because I was afraid that I was going to get high. Went to my sponsor. She helped me. We made out an envelope and I sent the last couple of payments and I had some money to the good. She said, sweetheart, none of that money is yours. She said, you're going to have to donate it. Now I'm struggling. I'm telling you, I was living paycheck to paycheck, half a paycheck. And I just could not believe she was making me do that. So I went to go do it. She says, I just wanted to see how willing you were. And she wind up letting me keep some of that money, but not all of it. But I did donate some. And it was to those companies. But now, you know, if you go to a store and you make want to make good on something, they have a restitution button on there. It registers now. And it says restitution. And you just pay them the money. But when I went, you had to call them, make an appointment, sit in their office and listen to them go up one side of you and down the other. But so I got through all of that and she helped me with that. And then it was time for us to get into the literature. We got through the literature and it was breathtaking to me because especially when we got to excuse me. When we got to the steps and we did everything through the big book. And I love the part where it talks about there is a solution. I love that. And more about alcoholism. I loved all of it. But how it works is the thing that really caught my attention. Because when it talks about it and they said, rarely have you seen a person fail, it caught my attention. And I wanted to know what it was that I was doing that I would fail at this if I didn't pay attention. So everything that they said, I tried to mimic it. And so when it was time for me to do my step one, I did it. And I used to keep reading me or I instead of we on the first step. And my sponsor kept putting her hand over top of my book. And I'm like, what's wrong with her? Get off my book. And she kept saying, well, you're reading it wrong. And I kept saying me or I or whatever I was saying, but I would never say we. I wasn't accustomed to a we. And then she says, I want you to take a look at all the stuff that you ever had to deal with, and I want you to pray before you even come into my home again. She says, because it's going to make a big difference. And I take everything very literally. So I started doing that. Then I started praying about asking God, excuse me, asking God all these questions about how am I going to get better? What do you want to do? All this kind of stuff. My stomach sponsor says, stop asking God all that mess. He got you. Don't even worry about that. And it says, we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. And when I got to that point, I kept saying I or me. No, that's not what it says. It says we. You're not doing this alone. You're not alone. You have a group of people, a group of drunks that would help you. You have your higher power that's going to guide you with clarity and direction. And you ask God for that every single day. And I still ask God for clarity and direction. And then he says, came to believe in the power greater than myself. Where, what are you talking about? I was done with God because we used to go to this Holy Roller Church. And they used to talk about this guy named Brother Murray. He's dead now. And he used to talk about he was bald mouthed as could be. He didn't have a tooth in his mouth. And he was praying to God he was going to get a third set of teeth. Well, this man never got a third set of teeth. So I was mad at God because he didn't give Brother Mary the third set of teeth. God is a miracle worker. Where's his teeth? So from that point on, I would go to church and I loved the Baptist churches because they had great music. I'd be just jamming to the music. soon as the preacher started talking, I wanted to leave. But I was missing out on a lot of stuff and didn't even realize it. So I came to believe in a higher grade in myself. And I asked my sponsor, well, how am I supposed to do this? She says, well, have a relationship with him. So every night when I sat down, because she was telling me that before I even got to the 10th step, just sit down and, write out a little bit of stuff. She was just teasing me with how much I was going to be willing. She was good with willing. And so I started doing that kind of stuff. And I would have a conversation with God. God, did you see what happened today? Did you help me with this? And I know that was you and da 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 da, And then I became so into this that I believe that God is the CFO of my finances because I had really screwed up. I've never been $66,000 in debt again, y'all. Barely making it, but I'm okay. And I never wanted for anything from the day that I joined Alcoholics Anonymous until the day I die. If I stay here, I'll never want for anything. The other thing was made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood it. And my sponsor said, well, get your own conception of God. I said, oh, that's brilliant. So I'm in a crazy house. So my son had a imaginary playmate called Dog Dog and Clement. So Dog Dog and Clement became my first higher power. It was fitting for somebody in the crazy house. So that's what I wound up doing. So then I got a little bit more into having this relationship with my higher power, and that can be the universe. I just use God because it's universal. But I like I like all kinds of things that has to do with spirituality because it some of it tickle my heart, and then some of it makes me want to just pause for a minute and take in what they're talking about. Does that make sense to me? Will that help me? Some stuff just won't fit for me. So, and I agree with that today. Before I would just hang on to the things that weren't working for me and then tell you people this is not working. But try your own conception. And when she was telling me that and I started reading the big book, I saw it in the big book. I said, she cheated, come telling me something that was already in the book. She could have said, go to page, but no, but that's not where I was at that particular time. So she was trying to ease it into me. Making a fearless and fearless moral inventory of myself. Oh boy, was that a rough one. And I had to write down the columns. And she said, you write down, like if whatever's when you get to that part and you have it, I'm resentful at, and then you go down the list. You don't go across, just go down. I'm like, why did it make me go down? But anyway, I said, okay, I'll do it. That's not the way that I'm accustomed to writing. She says, just write it down, okay? And she said, and then the cause, and then it's affect mine. And then the last one that a lot of people don't pay attention to, but I did because my sponsor told me this. She says, and what is your part, Turkey? That shut me down. I got real kind to those people that was on that list. And then I went through all of that with her. And what came up for me was a lot of fear and a lot of pride. And self-esteem was always bruised or banged up or banged or hit or hurt. So those are the things that I got when I went through that. And that was the first time. And I've been through the steps maybe 12 times, and I'll pick anybody and I say, you want to sit down and go through a fifth step with me? It doesn't have to be my sponsor. I just want to unload some stuff with some people. I had this one thing, these people that had been on my list for a long time. I'm going to tell you what happened. Just, what was it, about a month ago. And I could tell you that I was free of resentment, but I wasn't, because every time I saw this person, it felt like nails on the chalkboard. And I would smile, but it would never come through my eyes. It was just a fake smile and letting them think that everything was okay. But what I found out is when I go through all this, and I am resentful, and I had to write this stuff down. It's about resentments and forgiveness because I kept waking up and the word forgiveness kept showing up. It was on a paper that I had laid out some months ago. I don't even know where it showed up. It just showed up on my dresser one day and it said forgiveness. Another one, I was looking at TV and they were talking about forgiveness. I said, okay, God, I got the message. I got the message. So forgiveness. And I pick a word every year. This year's word is intentional. This is a overspill forgiveness that I haven't really dealt with. So about a few months ago, I was going over some stuff, and this is a spillover from last year. I wrote, letting them off the hook, Turby, is not a weakness. It's freedom. It's not erasing the past. Shadows of my soul has been damaged by me holding on to this. Nor it's not condoning, and it's not pretending that it never happened. Let it go, Turby, so you can have some peace. Disharmony and having that peace, letting go of making forgiveness or letting go of whatever it may be, is like a bridge to another life. It's the freedom that I can't even express to you guys. And lady said, aren't you embarrassed it took you that long? No, it took what it took. Because I was always good at faking it until I make it. You could hurt me and I would dislike you forever and a day. It could be an accident. Now I look at individuals totally differently. This person is acting out on fear. I can't take their inventory. Stop it, Turby. So whatever their issue is doesn't have to be my issue. So when I say that I forgive somebody, I truly forgive them when I say it today, because I didn't know how to do it before. It's like losing the grip of resentment or bitterness. And then that's when the peace starts to multiply. It like spreads through my body. When it hits my soul, I know God is at work. It's like, and I wrote this, and I don't know where I got this from. Can't let the termites devour what my foundation is supposed to be. And that's what it does. I can say a lot of things in a meeting, and I can do a lot of good deeds in a meeting. I can do a lot of service in a meeting. I can do X, Y, and Z in meetings. But if I'm not feeling it and you can't touch it in your heart or feel it in your heart, I haven't done the job that God has assigned for me to do. When I see a person now and I'm armed with all the information that my higher power in this reading and this, in this jargon that I wrote down is new information for me to let that person off the hook and look at them as another drunk, as Turpie is a drunk. And I just forgive them. It's like homecoming to the soul. And I just love that discovery that happened to me. And this year, my word is intentional. I'm going to tell you why I picked intentional. I get up in the morning and I do the same thing. I'm retired, y'all. I just love it. And I just go through a routine. I get up in the morning, I make my bed. I still do that. My sponsor told me a long time ago, she says, baby girl, she says, when you wake up, you go to the bathroom because you don't want to interrupt God. Go back, make your bed, get on your knees, say a prayer, and really mean your prayer. And when you ask God to direct your day, have God direct your day. And I was just going through the motions, going through the motions, going through the motions. Then I run into the kitchen, make my coffee, put on my breakfast, have my breakfast, sit down, and I don't look at my phone and stuff for the first hour after I wake up because it'll suck you in. The next thing you know, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I stopped doing that. And she had told me that before I even got a cell phone. And so those types of things that I started doing. And what wind up happening somewhere along the line, and I take medication, I have a blood pressure medicine, take vitamin D, and I do A and I mean vitamin B1 and 12 and a lot of vitamins. And I have a lung condition, so I have to get on and I use an inhaler, two different inhalers and that emergency one, and then I do a nebulizer at home. I have two little machines that I need because my lungs are not what they used to be. And it could be from the smoking, it could be from all the other stuff that I ingested. But I don't know, but I can do okay. I could still dance about 10 minutes. Now I gotta sit down. But I'm good. I'm good. So all those types of things. So I picked intentional because I would forget if I took my medicine. I forget if I took my inhaler. I forget. And the only reason I remember make my bed because I can think in the room and see the bed made. I don't, the my mornings go by like that. So being intentional means being present, Turby, the purpose of deliberate and consciousness of everything that I do. So I have to talk my way through it. I say, get up, go to the bathroom, Turby. I can remember if I went to the bathroom. Otherwise, I'd be wet to bed. But then I come back, I get on my knees, I pray, I make my bed. And I make my bed the same way every day. I don't just throw my covers up. I make my bed, and it's a great bed when I get in it. Oh, I love it. And So those are the types of things that I was doing. I make my coffee, I set a timer so I can be reminded that I used the coffee pot. And then the other thing that I do, I look at the channels and see what I want to look at if I don't have anything on my plate for the day. 90% of the time, I have a lot of stuff going on. And I know what exactly what I'm doing. I remember driving here today. Otherwise, it would be a blur. I would come in here saying, oh, that was a long ride. Not even looking at the beautiful mountain scenery that you guys have around here. Don't take that for granted, because that's God's work. And so those are the types of things. So that's why intentional is my word for this year. I can finally settle down and take resentment off for this year. Hope, no, I'm going to do it 1 month at a time since I just told that lie. I think I better do it monthly at a time, because somebody's going to really irritate me, and I know it. But anyway, but I'm going to be forgiving. But I have the tools today to get past that. So I'm real, real grateful for that. Thanks for your patience for listening to my little words for the year. So, and then made a first searching and fearless more inventory. I did all those things. I put it down and I gave it to her. And this is what my sponsor Ted said to me when I was packing up my stuff. She said, baby girl, she says, did you leave anything out? And I was like, oh crap. I thought I was gonna walk out the door with this one. And no. And I told her, but this is the thing. I rode with my sponsor, and I had an old raggedy car. She had a brand new car, and I finally got a car, and it was old raggedy. And you would have to wear a hat all the time because the roof on the inside, the material was dry rotted and would flake down on you, look like you had dandruff and snow on you. But I used to pack that car with people. We would ride to meetings. I'm telling you, everybody come out, and they would be shaking the stuff off of them. But we go into the meeting and we laugh about it. But and I would pick her up and take her home, or take her home to the meeting, or pick her up for the meeting, one or the other. And I remember telling her this story that I was holding, and she didn't even flinch. I went home and looked in the mirror. Said, did she hear what I said? She didn't even make a, and I said, I'm dragging this around. So it was the same thing that I had to tell her when she asked me, baby girl, what did you forget? And I told her that, and then something else came out. And that's what she was looking for. Because something in me that we were having a conversation, she told me that I bypassed it very quickly. And I went back and I had to tell her all the story about that. So I was clean with that. And I'm going to tell you, I didn't feel relief right away, that hallelujah, I'm free, don't have to carry that no more type of feeling. I felt it 2 days later. I was laying in the bed. And I woke up clear-eyed and not resenting or shutting my eyes, trying to shake away a horrible feeling or a horrible thing that I did to someone. And it was gone. I could not believe it. So I tell anybody, sharing releases you, sharing builds character, sharing makes you free. And who would have thought our raggedy stories? How many people we help by telling our raggedy story and the truth? That's the other big thing. Admit it to God and to ourselves and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Well, I'm very anal, because it said to others, to God, and to yourself. So what I did before I did my fifth step with my sponsor, I stood in the mirror and read to my fifth step, my fourth step to God. I cried like a baby. Then I went to my sponsor's house, and I didn't have, and I told her what happened. She says, well, you don't really have to read it to me. She says, but you're going to. But I read it to her, and I couldn't think that I could feel any better than I did when I read it to my higher power. I didn't cry with my sponsor, but I felt like twice the energy from doing that. Try it. It may help. Who knows? I don't know. Okay. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And my sponsor cheated, and she already wrote the list when I was doing my fifth step of all my defects. And she politely gave it to me after I finished that and folded. She said, fold that up, put it away. And when I asked for it, just bring it here. And she was a stickler for time. So I stood at her house, stood at her door, took like 5 minutes of it. And I waited exactly the minute of it, and I knocked on the door real quick because I don't want to be late. And I did that for a long time until she peeked out a peephole. She says, "I saw you every time. Why didn't you knock?" I said, "Because I was waiting the exact time." She said, "Please, just come when you come, but don't be late when you come. That's all." So I understood that. So we got through all of that, and I did went through it and entirely ready, and I removed all those defects, and I saw all those defects. And I believe, guess what was at the top of my list on that defect? Forgiveness. And I wish I could tell you it happened in my first year, my second year. It took 26 years for that to happen. But it happened. And then humbly ask him to remove these shortcomings. And shortcomings can be said another defect. I mean, I think they just ran out of stuff to say, but it's a defect. Don't, you know, my grandmother used to say a lie is a lie. There's no such thing as a white lie or a black lie. It's a lie. You know, just own up to it. And then humbly made a list of all the persons I had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. And I wrote the list and I did all of that. The first couple of people were family members. Went to my mother, took her out for lunch, and I wasn't living in Jersey then. My mother was still in the same place. Went there and took her out to lunch and sitting there, and I'm starting to cry and I'm saying, "Ma," I said, "I'm really, really sorry. I didn't know. My sponsor told me not ne never to use the word sorry if you can help it." She says, "Because you lived a sorry life, sweetheart. People already know you. And just say you apologize." That I apologize, and from here on out, from this day forward, from the day that I joined Alcoholics Anonymous, I hope I'm becoming the daughter that you deserve for you to have. And that's what I said to her. She looked at me just as clear-eyed as possible with a loving heart. And she said, "Sweetheart, you cannot pay me back a piece of mine. So you just keep that, give it to somebody else." She says, "But I'm loving what you do. Keep doing what you're doing." But she would not take my amends because I kept her up for many a night worrying about where I was and how I was doing. So that was the direct amends with my mother. My sisters were a little bit more lenient. My older sister, she got asked a lot of questions and stuff. I thought it was going to be an easy thing, but it was an overnight affair. And you know, but we got through that. And then and shortly after I did that, I started losing every single family member in my family. I lost my brother was first, and my mother went bat poop crazy. And then my mother passed away, my sister right before me. My older sister passed away, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. Driving to my sister's repast, we got a call from the sheriff's department, my brother died. So we had a double whammy in the, and I'm saying, God, why? And my sponsor always told me, never ask God why. It's none of your business. Try to stay the course. On each one of those deaths, I went to an AA meeting, like ASAP. I was out of town for three of them. I went to a meeting. Whew. Then this last one was my baby sister. She had stage four pancreatic cancer by the time they diagnosed it. And my sister and I became close over that time. And this is a sister that we just never connected. I don't know. I didn't dislike her. We just never got along. And this is what happened. I went on Google, asking Google how to get to know someone, a family member that you've lost contact with. And it gave me some suggestions because my sister would talk about, she has four sons. She would talk about her four sons, her husband, and her four daughter-in-laws. I'm like, this is not getting me anywhere. I kept telling my sponsor. She says, "All right." She said, "Do your Google thing and see what happens." I did Google on her a couple of times, and she started answering questions. And I became very, very friendly with her, and we became great. We would meet up halfway point. And then sometimes I would always go visit her. And she was a bingo fanatic. She taught me how to play bingo because I would yell bingo when I didn't have bingo. She said, "Girl, you're going to get a foot out of here. Shut up." So that type of thing. And for all those weeks, she kept telling me, she said, "My back is killing me." She said, "I don't know what it is. I've been sleeping in a chair for a couple of weeks." I said, "Don't call me again until you go to the doctor." Three weeks later, she went to the doctors and they told her she had stage four pancreatic cancer. It like sucked the wind right out of me. First thing I did, I went to an AA meeting. I told you people, you guys rallied around me. A couple of you drove with me until I to Jersey because I would go see her every other week because I was working then, and every other week I would go up and see her, stay in a hotel when I went by myself, and we hung out. And then I saw the transformation starting to happen, and it was sad to see, but I was grateful to be a part of it. And a year and 8 months later, my sister passed. And the first person my brother-in-law called was me. And I was happy. And then I thought about it. I said, hell, I was the only one left. You know, who else he gonna call? He said no. He said no. He had children. He has four sons. And he called me first. So I felt a little honored about that. And I went to my meeting, and I looked up when I went to her funeral, and there was people there from my home group or from people, friends that I knew that was at the funeral. And I was grateful for that. So I lost all of them. So today I'm taking the journey humbly, asking him to remove my shortcomings. And the shortcomings is I'm struggling with another person. And I'm working on that. I'm kind and patient and tolerant. I help them out when I can. My grandkids are my world now. And my oldest grandson is starting to fib. And I'm like, where is that coming from? He'll tell you no in a heartbeat when he knows he just did it. And I was like, okay. I hope he's not going to be one of us one day. So I keep praying for him, but I humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. My shortcomings can be impatient with others. My shortcomings can be I can't tolerate somebody that look me right in the face and tell me a bald face to fib. That hurts my feelings, like I'm so special and I don't know what that's about. So I'm asking God to help me with that one. And then made a direct amends to those people that I hurt. And I went through all of that and I did all of that. And I was very grateful to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous at this time because my life was just in chaos when I first got here. $66,000 in debt. I was homeless. I was in a crazy house. I had nowhere else to go. And Alcoholics Anonymous took me in just like I was a baby and treated me as if I was a baby. I was 43 years old when I got here. I'm 71 now. And I make direct amends when it's possible. If I have to, I'm not perfect and I haven't had to make one in a long time, but to this person, I probably will since I've had my newfound freedom from this. And God gave me the intuition and the intuitiveness to write things down and to see my part in a lot of it. I had to do a lot of missteps on that. Continue to take personal inventory. And when I'm wrong, is that it says when, if, but when I'm wrong, because I can be wrong a lot. The promptly admit it. And I have this little button in my pocket. It's a pause button that somebody gave me at one of the conventions. So when my son says something that I don't particularly like, either one of my sons, I said, hold on a minute. I just paused. It's black. I want to break it. And I said, I'll get back to you on that. Because I had to think through it. Because if I say something I really don't mean, it'll hurt someone. And then saw through prayer and meditation, that's my favorite thing. And you hear Duane say it all the time. We can do a lot with prayer and meditation. You pray, you're going to get some release. But if you pray and meditate, it's an unshakable foundation. It ain't going nowhere. Well, I don't know how to meditate. My mind keeps whirling. Well, your mind is going to whirl. The only way your mind is going to stop whirling is when you're dead. So just stay at it. If I hear a bus coming, I don't have to turn around. I just acknowledge it and stay in the moment. It took me 7 years to do a 30-minute meditation, but I didn't give up. I just kept at it, just kept at it, just so I can have that. If it's just for that 30 minutes that I'm at peace, I'll take it. And then it brings up things. And I think this was the first thing in the meditation that brought up the forgiveness thing for me. So well, so through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood and prayed only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry it out. Well, my job is to carry it out as best I possibly can with all people that I meet, not just the ones that I like, because the book tells us all, not your friends turn me, just all people. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles for all my affairs, not all the ones it's easy. Yep. Spiritual development is not an accomplishment, but it's a way of life. And my sponsor had mentioned that to me several different times, and I claimed the claim of spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection, because nothing is perfect in God's world. Nothing is perfect in Turpie's world. Perfect in the higher powers world, or whatever you want to say. But I've been through a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the things that I like to leave you guys with is that one page, I think it's in the Daily Reflection, and I love it. And it talks about it a lot. And I think it's March 23rd, is my favorite reading in the Daily Reflection. And it says, I like to think if sobriety is God's gift to me, then my sober life is my gift to God. And I hope God is as happy with his gift as I am with mine, because it has changed my life. Thanks for letting me share. And I appreciate the invite. Thank you.